And we are live for a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintraub. How are you doing this week, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
All right, let's dive in. We have some cool stuff to talk about this week, some controversial stuff to talk about. And let's start with that, with the Model Y. So we've been trying to figure out what's the production and demand situation with the Model Y for a while now, since for last month or so, since Tesla restarted production in Fremont Factory. There's been a bunch of indicators that the demand is not that great, and production has been a big question mark around it, like how fast, how soon Tesla is going to get back to the production capacity they had pre-pandemic. And there was an email from Elon Musk that leaked this week that revealed at least partly what was the situation with the Model Y production. I mean, the subject of the email was literally Model Y production. You need to read between the lines a little bit, because he's not like obvious. Because at this point, Elon, when he sends an email to all the production team or everyone at Tesla, he knows it's going to leak. So
it's basically a press release, right?
I mean, it's as close as it gets, since Tesla doesn't have really a PR department these days. So yeah, to a degree, you're right. But at the same time, the language is not a press release language. He's talking to the employees, but he's not being as clear as it could be, because, of course, he knows he's going to leak. Anyway, what he says is basically highlighting the importance of the Model Y production ramp, which if you do that, like, there's normally... emails like that from Elon is like, all right, there's an issue here. Let's focus on that. Let's try to fix it, because it's important for Tesla. And he especially said that it's important to minimize rectification needs. So what that generally means is that what happens when a car goes through the production line, and normally it's completed, then it goes through the review process, and through the review process, they note some issues with the car that they need to go fix. Issues that normally shouldn't need to be fixed, that you need to be done correctly during the normal production process. So you need to do those rectification. And when you do that, that's outside of the production process or production line. So it's a lot of, it's a work hour and man hour extensive. So it adds a lot of cost and time to the production of the vehicles. And also it's, bigger on the quality assurance side. Like the more rectification you have, the higher chances that some of them will slip. And since some of them will slip, then the quality of the cars coming out of the line won't be great. So apparently there's an issue on that. And then he continued on that, because he says that the problem is mainly with the general assembly. So that generally where you will have some rectification to be done. Like, it's not on the body level or anything like that. It's like trims and things like that are having issues. And we're starting to see more reports from owners taking delivery right now where the car is not in great condition being delivered. So this is in line with the anecdotal customer reports. So he's talking specifically about the GA4, which is the General Assembly Line 4. And that he says that it's a top facility for improvement right now, a top priority for improvement. So they want them to improve GA4, which is the infamous Tesla tent outside of the factory, where the tent that they used to increase the Model 3 production to 5,000 units a week. And now it's apparently also being used for Model Y, and they're trying to ramp that up. He even says that he thanks the employees on that line, because they say they have tough conditions right now. So I'm not sure what he means by that exactly. Of course, there's the entire problem around the COVID too. We reported earlier this week that some employees tested positive there, though not at the GA4 line. What we heard specifically was the Model S and X production line, so that has nothing to do with GA4. But so I don't know if I'm not sure the tough conditions are related to that. But they do have to wear a mask and everything, and maybe the AC is not as good in the tent as it is inside the factory itself. And it was a hot week this week in California, so maybe
you know, that's there. Interesting. You mentioned the tent. That's kind of more open air, and my understanding is open air is way better at not transmitting.
That's true.
COVID as you know, inside a factory.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's going to be a strategic advantage for Tesla. I hadn't thought about it. told just now, but that's pretty interesting.
But at the same time, when we talk about the tent thing, like it was called a tent and it went crazy in the media because like the media loved to make Tesla look bad and like, oh, they're now making cars inside of a tent. That's how bad it's getting. But the tent is, there's another word for it, but it's really a structure, like a long-standing structure. It's a little bit more rigid than your average tent. But yeah. Elon also said that they are doing reasonably well when it comes to S, X, and 3, but there are production and supply chain ramp challenges with Model Y. So it looks like production on Model Y is not doing that great. So that's on the production side of things. But then there's also the demand side of things. And even though the production doesn't seem to be going that well, it does appear that the demand is not quite there too. So we talked about last week and last week's podcast about the acceleration of the delivery timelines, which generally is an indication that the production is starting to outpace more the demand. But now this week, we got a few other indication of that. Starting with the referral program, the Model Y, new Model Y's orders were added to the referral program for 1,000 miles of supercharger range, which is not... which is not crazy. Like we discussed it just last week. We came up to the, like it was maybe like $30 or $50 worth of incentive. So it's not that much of an incentive, but it still is. And Tesla was always saying that they wouldn't add a car to the program that they don't need to create demand for because, it makes no sense. It's an incentive to buy and you don't need incentive to buy if the car, demand is outpacing production. So it makes sense that if they are adding it to the program right now, they are seeing the backlog being reduced and production starting to outpace it. So I think it's an indication of weaker demand right now. If you look at back in the Model 3 days, did I put it here? The Model 3 was added almost a year after the deliveries on the Model 3 started, and they only did the Model 3 Performance, so the more expensive version of the car. So now both versions of the Model Y are eligible to the referral program. And it's only, technically like 3 months after they started deliveries. But 1 month of that was also, there were no deliveries, no production. So it's really showing that, of course, everything we say about the demand, we say it in the context of there's a global pandemic that is affecting the whole market. But people thought that despite the pandemic, Tesla would come out fairly okay with the Model Y because of the large backlog of orders. But I'm starting to see now that I think that it had a big effect on Model Y program too, like bigger than most people think, I think, or at least Tesla fans.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, you know, they put down a deposit and they weren't 100% sure if they were going to, you know, get a new car, and you know, a lot of things happened since then. A lot of people are out of work. So
even though it was kind of the best show of interest of any reservation program before for Tesla, because it started just a year before production, which generally it's longer for Tesla vehicle, and it was 2,500 versus 1,000 for the Model 3. So I think it was a strong show of interest, which makes it makes things look even worse right now when people are canceling them in masses.
Right.
I don't know if you look at your own referrals in your program, but I had a lot of referrals online and I saw a bunch of cancellation in the last 2 months or so.
I haven't been looking, but I was going to say anecdotally, you know, I have a Model Y on order. Mm-hmm. I still haven't got the call or the notification that like, hey, I can come pick it up.
That might be more for the configuration though, with your white interior and stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty basic besides the white interior. Mm-hmm. So like as long as white interiors are shipping, I feel like I should be, you know, somewhere soon. My Model X lease is over in August. So I'm actually not in a hurry to get it.
Yeah, did you ever told anyone that you weren't in a hurry?
No.
Because I do know that Tesla reached out to a bunch of reservation holders saying, when do you plan on taking delivery of your order? And some people said like you, like, oh, actually, I cannot take the delivery until August because I have a little car there and I'm not lease or whatever, whatever the reason is. And then Tesla put those people on a list. But now some of them have reported that Tesla is reaching back to them. And they're like, oh, by the way, would you mind taking delivery sooner now? Has anything changed? And they're like, no, I'm still need to only take delivery in August or something like that. So Tesla is trying to push car by the end of the month, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't, I mean, on my account, it doesn't say anything new. But theoretically, they could know. I mean, they know when my Model Y or Model X lease, sorry, Model X lease is up. So theoretically, they could have matched that up. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't see Tesla doing that, though. not at this stage of the game.
Another indication that the Model Y demand is a little bit weaker is that they already started deliveries in Canada, which was fairly quick. First deliveries were reported in British Columbia on Wednesday night. So that's also a little bit quicker than Tesla used to for international expansion. For Model 3, deliveries to customers started in December 2017 in the US, but in Canada was May 2018, so 4 months. And now, again, 3 months for the Model Y, but with 1 month not having deliveries at all, so more like 2 months, really. Sorry. So, yeah. And while we're talking about 10 engine deliveries, I wouldn't count on Canada being a big volume for Tesla for the Model Y, unfortunately. Even though it's kind of the perfect car for Canadian market, like Canada, like we do love our pickup trucks, like the US too, to a degree and everything. We do love our SUVs, our big car, but we Canada is like a little bit on the smaller side. They like it smaller too. We do love our four-wheel drive because of the weather. So it would be an interesting car for the market. But I think the problem is the incentive program, which is a double-edged sword. Is that what's the saying on that? Double-edged sword?
It's a double-edged sword.
So it does increase demand for vehicles. But if you have some eligibility to the program, and we have in Canada in terms of the maximum MSRP that you can have on the car, and what it does, if one car doesn't fall under that eligibility, it makes it a little harder for people to buy it, because they want, if they already have in mind that they're going to buy an electric car and there's thousands of dollars of being offered, they kind of want to take advantage of that. So if the car doesn't fall into it, it won't work. And in the case of the Model Y, it doesn't right now, and it doesn't look like it would be in the future, because we'd have two programs. There's programs countrywide at the federal level, which is a decent program at $5,000 per vehicle, but it has to start at less than 45. And right now, the Model Y starts at 76, so nowhere near that. And even
not even close.
Not even, like, sometimes when it was close enough, Tesla would play with the numbers a little bit, remove a few features, and reduce the battery pack capacity. It did that with the Model 3. But now with $30,000 difference, I doubt that's going to happen. Then you have also the province. Some province have programs like British Columbia and Quebec. Quebec has the most generous one. It's $8,000, and that's on top of the federal one. So you get $13,000 on a car. So you don't want to leave that like on the table. You want a car that's eligible. And the top limit is higher than the federal program. It's $60,000, but again, it's nowhere near 76. The base version, like we know that the Model Y also is going to have a standard range plus version. Maybe that one's going to be closer. We'll see. I doubt that it's going to be under any, but maybe Tesla is going to be able to do its play with the numbers a little bit to make that one work.
And maybe they'll have the call-in special.
Yeah. You know, the off-the-menu item.
Off-the-menu.
Yeah.
Also, we should note that, like, you know, if you're thinking about Canada as a geographic area, the population size is, I mean, geographically huge, but population, it's about the same as California.
Correct.
From a number standpoint, it's not going to be anywhere close to the US.
It's not, but it is a country that's fairly rich. And with those incentives, it was a big market for Tesla. I mean, in Q1 alone, Tesla delivered 4,000 Model 3 vehicles in Canada. That's a good number for a market of that size. Size. So if the Model Y was eligible to those incentives, it would have been just as popular, even more popular. For the federal program, there's kind of a tiny hope, but I don't think it's going to work either. They have a higher MSRP limit of $55,000 if you have a 7-seater and more, which the Model Y is going to have a 7-seat option. But I doubt that the base version, even a standard range plus, if it's offered as a seven seater, I doubt it's going to be $55,000 Canadian. I doubt it. So yeah, something to think about. That's about it for us this week with the Model Y. All right. Well, we just talked about Canada. This thing happened in Canada, though it affects owners everywhere. I think that was an interesting story. People liked it this week. Thought that was a little bit controversial, but still interesting. Ever since Tesla started releasing features inside the car that are software lock feature, I mean, all the way back to years ago when Tesla was selling like a 75 kilowatt hour Model S, software limited at 60 kilowatt hour. And then later on, it was all the autopilot features. And more recently, we had the acceleration boost and everything like that. All those features are the capacity exists on the car in terms of the hardware is just software locked. Tesla doesn't allow you to access them. Ever since they went down, there's been a lot of talk. Okay, there's going to be a hacker at some point that's going to just like buy the car without those features and just act his way to those features to get them at no cost or a lower cost than Tesla's charging. Now, a company did that in Quebec, and they are now offering the act to other Tesla owners to get the capability at a discount to what Tesla is offering. The company is started by Guillaume André, the owner of Simon André. I'm familiar with the guy and Simon André itself because they're based in Trois-Rivières, which is near where my parents live, and my parents have my Model S signature. So since the Simon André is closer than the Simon, by the way, Simon André is like it's a shop that resell electric vehicles, either new Teslas or used Teslas and used electric cars of all kinds. And they also do repair and improvements and service on those cars. So they take care of my parents, my Model S signature that my parents drive. And also I've hung out with the guys because they're just giant heavy fans too. And I'm always down to talk about electric cars, as you guys know. And we went with them. We reported on them before too on electric when they did that Honda S2000 electric conversion. That was crazy. And we have a few videos of that on electric if you want to check that out. But yeah, so what they wanted to do at Simon André is they wanted to try to see if they could take a Model 3 rear-wheel drive and make it dual motor all-wheel drive. Because the place for the motor, the front motor is already there. So they just use a front motor from another Model 3 and put it in the rear-wheel drive Model 3. But in order to achieve that, you need to change the software on the drive inverter to send power to both motors and control that power and everything. So they basically had to hack the drive inverter. And once they did that, they realized, all right, so now we hacked the drive inverter. We know how it works and everything. So we can not just offer to add a front motor to a rear-wheel drive Model 3, which could be a product in itself. I mean, people like you said, who was an early adopter of the Model 3 back when it was only offered in rear-wheel drive, and maybe like now you would want a dual motor instead of like selling your car, buying a dual motor. Maybe you could have, it would be cheaper for you to get just a front motor, which I think Tesla, like there was rumors about Tesla offering that at some point, but I think it never panned out. Cindy Monroe said that, I think, right?
Yeah, but I feel like Elon debunked it in a tweet or something.
I think he was like, he misspoke. Maybe it was like, it's doable. It's just about Tesla's not, has never been into offering stuff like that. Right. So anyway, now that they know how the drive inverter works, they're like, all right, maybe we can offer some different features to existing dual motor owners. For example, that acceleration boost that Tesla offered a few months ago, like late last year, that basically adds 50 horsepower to your car for $2,000 and you get a faster 0-60 acceleration on your car. Tesla is charging $2,000 for that, but it's literally just changing, like unlocking some power in the drive inverter. So they did that. All they have to do is they have this little module here that they put, you can install it yourself. You just open the underneath the glove box, you access the MCU, you unplug something and plug it into that and then back into the MCU. So it bypassed the MCU and pushed some software to the drive inverter. And with that, you automatically, as soon as you plug it in, you unlock that 50 horsepower more. So you get that 3.8 seconds 0-60 acceleration. And on top of it, they do give you a few other goodies. Like they have this software, like they can accept through a web browser, and that will give you access to like a drift mode. So you can disable traction control, stability control, all that stuff to get some kind of drift mode together. You have battery pack heating. You can access the battery pack heating through that software, and you also have automatic drive door opening for the Model 3. So it works a little bit like the Model X self-opening doors, but there's no motor, of course, on the Model 3 doors, so it doesn't completely open. But they triangulate your signal of the phone, and as you walk up to the driver's door, they just automatically press the electronic button inside the Model 3. It's the same thing as if you would do that, and the door opens up. It works well. I've seen a demonstration from them. It works pretty well. So you get those three little goodies. On top of the 50 HP boost for $1,100, so it's a $900 discount on top of plus those little features that I just mentioned.
And what happens if Tesla negates it in a future upgrade?
All right, so I'm not sure on that front. So they offered that, okay, and that they guarantee that you will keep getting software update. Tesla cannot block software update for that, apparently. The way it works, they're confident about that. But they have another product that's a little bit crazier, which is they can basically turn your dual motor Model 3 into a performance Model 3, or more appropriately, a stealth performance Model 3, which is a car that Tesla has been selling on and off, which is has the same capability of a multi performance, but doesn't come with the package with the 20-inch wheels and the bigger brakes and the aluminum pedals and whatever. So, or the spoiler and anything like that. So it doesn't look like a performance car, but it has the same capabilities because it shows that not on all dual motors performance, there's some that don't have the same motors apparently, but you can check the motors and be eligible for that. But a lot of dual motor Model 3 that Tesla produce are hardware-wise the same as the performance Model 3. So it's just a software difference. However, it's a more intrusive way that they can unlock that software, they say. Don't go into too much details, but you need to go to a garage, a professional that can install it. So they are partnering with some garage to make the upgrade. But I don't think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to go for it, to be honest with you, because they charge $2,250 US. Compared to Tesla's like $4,000 to $5,000 they were charging for a dual motor to a performance version. They don't offer that as a software upgrade, but they would just sell the car as that, and they would be about $4,000 to $5,000 more expensive. So it is cheaper. And you do get things like the track mode. They do unlock track mode too. So you have a full, like the stealth Model 3 didn't have, stealth Model 3 performance didn't have track mode too, I think. So you do get a little bit more than what Tesla offered too. So that's cool. But yeah, it was a controversial post for sure, because it's basically like offering features that Tesla already offers, but for cheaper. But at the same time, and I do get that argument too, a lot of people just see it as, I bought the car already, I own the hardware now. If I'm able to unlock some capability with it, I can do whatever that I want and get that software, which is fair, I think. But I would be careful on the warranty side of things. Like if you start playing with things like that, I think Tesla could pull the argument that it's not as safe, even though I'm told by Guillaume that they are basically copying Tesla's own performance software. So if the performance version is safe, then theirs should be safe too. But I wouldn't be someone that have this and then has to argue with Tesla about a warranty repair that's related to the powertrain.
For sure.
And Tesla has a good warranty for the powertrain with 8 years. So, but especially for the Ghost upgrade, which is the stealth performance upgrade that they're offering. For the other one, for the Boost 50, I think it's a little less intrusive. It makes sense. It's reversible too, so you could probably just unplug this thing if you want to go to Tesla service, and then it would be like nothing happened. So this one, I feel a little bit more confident about it. And I just talked to Guillaume today, and apparently since we posted that yesterday, there's been a bunch of people went for it and bought it. So good for them. But yeah, at your own risk, definitely.
Yeah. And so I remember there was something about Tesla saying that the performance motors had been tested a little bit more or something. They had been tested to a higher degree, I guess, than the regular all-wheel drive ones. So is there any risk? I mean, I guess there's always risk, but is there any risk of these like normal all-wheel drive motors being overtaxed by the performance, the amount of electricity coming through the performance upgrade?
Yeah, well, they do acknowledge that, and they do have on their website, they have different codes for the motors that you need to check before buying the Ghost upgrade, where if your front motor has a certain part number, or the rear motor, now I don't remember which one, or maybe both, but you have to check the part number before that, and some parts number they don't cover. So, and it's mostly older dual motor that can receive that Ghost upgrade. All right, Tesla Semi, we had a somewhat strange email from Elon that leaked this week about the Tesla Semi production. So in the email, he says it's time to go all out and bring the Tesla Semi to volume production. But he doesn't offer any kind of timeline for it or anything like that. Then he goes on to say that it's been in limited production so far, which has allowed us to improve many aspects of the design. Then he goes on to say production of the battery and powertrain would take place at Giga Nevada, with most of the other work probably occurring in other states. So for someone that says that it's time to bring it when we go all out to production, I find it weird that he talks about probably the production being somewhere else than where they are right now. So it kind of hurts me a little bit for email, and in terms of and not that much new information too, because battery and powertrain in Giga Nevada we already knew about. Like we already knew it's going to be there, and we reported on that new building that Tesla is leasing, large building is leasing next to the current main factory, and apparently a lot of that work is going to happen there. But the assembly of the car or the body of the truck is going to be somewhere else apparently. My bet is on Austin, but we'll see. So yeah, going out, bringing to volume production, but no timeline. And the last timeline we have is that the deliveries have been pushed to next year. So it's and just 2021, that's all they said. So early 2021, late 2021, we don't know for sure. I kind of have, and I'd like to have your opinion on that, with Nikola Motors being in the news a lot this week with their, can you consider that an IPO? But going public through like the back door, really, by buying this like a shell company, basically. You think it's in reaction to that? They're like, he sees all that, and he's like, I'm going to shut that down and like just bring the Tesla Semi to production, or at least talk about bringing the Tesla Semi to production for people that like, now might be considering the Nikola as a possibility. They're like, hey, Tesla Semi is coming, and you're going to want the Tesla Semi, not the Nikola one.
Maybe. I mean, so, you know, we might have talked about this before, but we've heard some weird stuff about Nikola Motors, that, you know, there might be, you know, a lot of stagecraft going on maybe, and not as much actual work going
on. The best word for it, I think, is vaporware. They're the definition of vaporware.
Right. So, I mean, if Tesla really knows what's going on with Nikola, or if they've heard the same things we've heard, they are probably not too worried about that company.
I know, but still, just like term of being in the news and stuff like that, that's more like the way I'm talking.
Yeah, I mean, Elon definitely likes to be in the news. Like, that's a given. But you know, I don't know. Like if I was Tesla Semi people, I wouldn't be too worried about that.
Sure, yeah.
You know, like there's a lot of money being thrown at Nikola. I don't even know what the stock price is at, but it was crazy for a while. You know, I don't even know how to short stuff.
Oh, I looked into it, and you couldn't short the stock when it doubled in price and was valued at $30 billion. They had 120% interest rate on shorting the stock. Okay. So like a lot of people is going to make a lot of money that people have got in early and they've been shorting the stock. Because I think it did crash a little bit in the last 2 days, but no, with the market too. The market also took a dip.
I mean, that's not my thing. You know, I like to invest in companies I think that do well. But I've never heard of a company that has not produced anything being worth that much money. And I think a lot of it is, you know, Nikola Tesla. I think the connection to Tesla, the fact that they're doing a similar product as the Tesla Semi, which, you know, has an opportunity to kind of change the market, you know, might have pissed off Elon and Tesla a little bit. So,
well, yeah, they are clearly riding their coattail, and then with the lawsuit on top of it, I could see Elon being angry at Nikola and just want to affect them negatively. And they did. Like when Tesla shoot up to $1,000 a share this week, that was on the Tesla Semi news, really, to a degree. And the same day, Nikola was way down too. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
But I do like the renewed focus on bringing the Tesla Semi to production for a few reasons. First of all, it's been delayed for 2 years now. So, like, I would like Tesla to stick to its timeline every now and again. That'd be nice. also, it's a massively important product. We all know trucks, commercial trucks, are an important part of emissions in the transport sector. So it's an extremely important product to bring to market. And I think it's going to change everything for the trucking industry. Like the numbers that I'm seeing right now are very important. And every percentage point that you can reduce costs in the transport industry have massive positive impact throughout a bunch of other industries too, because everything has been on a truck at some point. Everything you have in your house right now has been a truck at some point. If you can reduce the cost of bringing it there, that's great. That's great for everyone. And that I think Tesla Semi is going to do that. And Tesla Semi also, when Elon in that email says that they improve in many aspects of the design, I think that's true. And I think the battery is going to be a big deal too. Now, they've made a lot of improvement on batteries since they unveiled that truck. I mean, that was unveiled back in 2016, right? End of 2016.
That was the same as the Roadster. I think it was 2017.
2017, maybe. But yeah, it's been a while. Tesla's made a lot of improvement in batteries since. And with the 1,000,000-mile battery in that truck, if you have, like, you increase the longevity of the powertrain of the truck, you increase you decrease the maintenance cost and you decrease the cost of operation. I think we're gonna have some great cost of operation numbers on that truck, and it's gonna fly off the shelves, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, look at Amazon. They put a ton of money into Rivian to get delivery trucks, electric delivery trucks. They're not idiots. They know the writing on the wall. I think the As soon as electric trucks start hitting the street and people start saving big bucks on delivery costs, I think that's going to just be a flip of a switch. And but basically, they won't be able to make enough of them.
For sure.
For a long time.
Because it's not like there's a lot of aspects that are not being considered like they are in the passenger space. Like in passenger space, you can have someone that's like, I just don't like all the Tesla looks. So yeah, the bunch of people, like the Model 3 front end is disgusting. I don't want anything to do with it. It could be the best car on the market, but for some like small design reason, they would never buy it or whatever it is. There's none of that in the commercial space. The commercial space, like you could buy a truck on a spreadsheet and just looking at the spreadsheet and like, oh, really? I'm going to save that much money if I buy that? And then they're buying that. So as soon as Tesla can like confidently prove their numbers to buyers, it's going to be crazy. The order is going to come in like crazy. So can't wait to see that happen. But while we talk about 1,000,000-mile battery, let's start about the history. Historically, Tesla battery already been doing, because we've discussed that earlier. Last weekend, I had my latest episode on the iMileage series that we are posting on Electrek. We have an article every 2 weeks and a YouTube video if you haven't checked it out yet. And it's about this Model X that I bought a few months ago. That's the highest mileage Model X in the world with over 400,000 miles on it. And consequently, one of the highest mileage electric vehicle in the world. And we are using it as some kind of like case study to see the longevity of electric vehicles. And last episode was on battery degradation. But we went way beyond just talking about my car specifically, which if you guys want to know, we can go into it quickly. But it had 400,000 miles, but it had the battery replacement at 317, I want to say. Yeah, 317 miles. It had decent battery degradation then, but that's not why it was replaced at all. It was replaced because of it would literally go around 40% state of charge, which at that point was still about 90 miles of range. It would go from 40% state of charge to zero almost instantly. So you would think you still have 90 miles of range going, but then the car would just go super fast and shut down. So that's a massive problem, of course. But that happened at 317,000 miles. So still a good life for that battery. And also, I have to say, on that car, probably was abused a little bit. So a lot of supercharging, 100% maybe even. So not ideal for longevity of the battery pack. But then we added almost 100,000 miles on it since. And now the car gets about... exactly 230 miles of range, 270 kilometers on a full charge. Brand new, with a new battery pack, it was supposed to be 257 miles of range for 414 kilometers. So that's a 10.5% degradation over almost 100,000 miles, which is not ideal. But that brings us to the other subject that during that episode, I released this chart here. And this chart basically shows that the 90 kilowatt hour battery pack that Tesla produced for a few years before switching to the 100 kilowatt hour battery pack, and that pack was all, the 90 kilowatt hour battery pack was replacing the original 85 kilowatt hour battery pack that Tesla was producing. It is degrading, especially at the beginning, a lot faster than the 85 kilowatt hour pack. And I posted this chart. I didn't go to too much details in it. And there's another reason for that. I'm going to go in a little bit. But we posted that just as part of the discussion. But people had a lot of questions on it. So just a few hours ago, I ended up posting another article on it to go to a little bit more details. First of all, this is important data because I would argue it's the best data that we ever had on specific like Tesla battery degradation, because we had some like crowdsourced information before that was useful to a degree, but nothing like that. Like it's not like a few hundred data points. This is tens of thousands of data points.
And we should probably clarify, like this was somebody passed along Tesla's data.
It's not really my story to tell, like the people behind that data leak, which to be clear wasn't a nefarious data leak. It was indulged with Tesla and everything, so it was indulged like by over the board, but the data got itself out there anyway, so it's not my story to tell. So I won't go into the details about the leak itself, but back in late 2017 basically, the data for all Tesla vehicles in the fleet was available to a degree. So we got that data and compare it from all 90 kilowatt hour battery pack vehicles to all 85 kilowatt hour battery pack vehicles. And so every point you see on that chart here is a Tesla vehicle. The green ones are the 90 kilowatt hour pack, and the 85 are the blue ones are the 85 kilowatt hour battery pack. And you can show that it shows clearly that the 90 kilowatt battery pack degrades a lot faster. Of course, there's not as much longer data on it because it was a little bit newer battery pack than the 85 at the time. But still, you can see the trend here, even though it will slow down over time because the degradation is not linear. It slows down as you have more mileage. But still, the drop at the beginning is clearly a lot more pronounced than the 85 kilowatt battery pack. If you look at it, well, first of all, this is using usable capacity, which is really the thing you want to look at. Mm-hmm. And the y-axis is the usable capacity. The x-axis is the kilowatt hour total over time since the car was new. So like 20,000 kilowatt hour, which is for like the 90 kilowatt hour pack, it's 235 full cycles of the pack. So about 60,000 miles or whatever. And... the 90 kilowatt hour pack had an actual usable capacity when new of 85 kilowatt hour on average, because all packs are just a tiny bit difference every now and again. And after 20,000 kilowatt hour of use, it already dropped by about 6 kilowatt on average. So versus the 85 kilowatt hour pack, which has a usable capacity new of 80.5, drop at just 77 kilowatt hour. See, that's almost half the drop over the first 20,000 kilowatt hour use.
Right. So basically, the 90 kilowatt hour pack, at some point, I don't know where those lines cross, but basically where they cross, they become the same. And then the 90 kilowatt hour pack at that point becomes a smaller, essentially a smaller pack than the 85 kilowatt hour pack.
Though again, the data is not perfect because there's more 85 kilowatt hour pack with more mileage on them than the 90 at that time specifically. So it should smoothen out a little bit, but especially at the beginning, like people, and that's before
quick drop.
Yeah, that's the main thing that people were talking about before we got that data. Like we saw a lot of anecdotal reports from owners of 90 kilowatt hour vehicles that were like, what's happening here? Like I don't get the EPA range at all. Like within months of using the car because of that quick drop. Like the drop at the beginning is quick. It's clear that Tesla had a problem with that. But the reason why is we don't know for sure. What we do know is like the battery pack itself from 85 kilowatt hour to 90 kilowatt hour didn't change that much. Tesla didn't change the design that much. But they did change the chemistry of the cells. So to achieve the higher energy density in the pack without changing the battery pack design itself, they changed the chemistry and it looks like they achieve a higher energy density, but they figured out quickly that the longevity is not as good. So that's a real bummer. The good news is that the 90 kilowatt battery pack has been discontinued too. Now Tesla only produced the 100 kilowatt battery pack. And we don't have that same kind of data on that pack as we do that because this hasn't been a giant data leak in a while, which is good news really in itself. We haven't seen reports like we had for the night.
Right.
So the anecdotal information that we have is better, looks better for the 100 kilowatt pack than it does for the 90. So that's the good thing. But for 90 kilowatt hour battery pack owners like myself, it's a bit of a bummer.
And me too.
Yeah. Though at least you don't own the car. So once it goes back for the lease, you don't suffer the
Tesla's problem.
Yeah. You don't suffer the value a loss on it. What I would like to see, because again, my car got a battery replacement under warranty, which is nice. But I'm seeing aggressive degradation on this one too. After 100,000 miles on it, 10% is a bit faster than what Tesla's claiming. Like Tesla's claiming like 10% after 160, 200 miles. And we saw that in the impact report that Tesla released this week. They released this chart here. But of course, people always have issues with like zooming in into a chart and changing the y-axis to like just show the but like you have to show closer on this one. Like it doesn't make sense to go to 0% here. Like show us like from 100 to 80% here. Give us a better idea of what it looks like. But yeah, it looks like about like 15%, 10 to 15% after 200 miles of range. Or actually like before that, like 150 miles of range, it's already in the same level. And then the retention change a lot with the standard of deviation. But
you also have to keep in mind that Test Loop was running those things on, continuously across the, across the desert using superchargers for the,
That's definitely for my specific car, but I'm comparing in general to the other data that we have that Test Loop wasn't involved in. But yeah, my new battery pack that was replaced also is seeing that. But that was replaced in late 2018. So like after the 90 kilowatt hour battery pack was discontinued, I think at that point. Yeah, I think it was. So Tesla replaced it with another 90 kilowatt hour battery pack that was also performing badly it's not that bad. I shouldn't say badly, but it's not performing very well compared to the 85, the older battery pack, for example. So it would be nice for Tesla to replace those packs with better performing ones. So I would like to see them like use the same chemistry they use in the 100 kilowatt battery pack, even if it's not the same pack, but they have a lower energy density, but the same battery that have longer longevity. That would be nice, but we'll see. All right, the other thing this week that was interesting, the solar roof, and that will bring us to another subject too, that more general. We can talk about Tesla reservation process, but we've been getting reports from Tesla server roof reservation holders being told that Tesla is canceling their orders years into them because they will not serve the area. And I'm not talking about the middle of nowhere. I'm talking like in Oregon and next very large cities in Oregon. And I also got a report from someone in Michigan. And a bunch of other people are receiving those emails right now. But Tesla is saying that upon further review, your home is not located within our currently planned service territory. The driving distance from our closest warehouse would make it difficult for us to provide you with high quality service to a customer deserve. For this reason, we will not be able to proceed with your project. And then they say that they got to proceed with the refund within 7 and 10 days. So as you can imagine, some of those reservation holders are not happy about that. Because they placed an order with Tesla 3 years ago when they first started taking deposits, and they gave them $1,000, and now it took Tesla 3 years to figure out that, oh, we're not going to serve your area. So they basically gave Tesla $1,000 free loan for a year for no reason, which is not...
Tesla should give them stock at what the $1,000 was worth at the time of
$1,000 worth of stock in Tesla from 2 years ago. That's a good move. That'd be nice. It's not great for sure, and it brings us to the wider concept of Tesla's like reservation process, which I've been looking down upon for a few years now. Like my perception on it changed. It's good for Tesla. Like, it's good for them to show interest in the product. It's even good for them to plan to a degree, to plan production capacities and be based on the interest in the product and everything like that. But in terms of the value, like, they always sold it as a value to customer, in that the first to reserve, the first you will to get it. Like, that was a big thing for Elon for a long time. Like, he was talking a lot about that, like pushing the reservation, first to reserve, first to get it. But it's just not the case as much anymore. Maybe it was for like Roadster, Model S, Model X to a degree, but for Model 3 and for Model Y and now for Solar Roof and for the Roadster and the Tesla Semi, you can, like, that's even getting crazier. But I don't see it as having as much value anymore. Like, it's, unless you're in California, that it does seem to work. Like, you're getting the car sooner. And some people have been bragging about, like, oh, like in the middle of like Florida, like something like, oh, I've been the first to get the car in Florida. But then you're still like 3 months into Tesla delivering the cars. And then a bunch of people in California that never reserved the car got it way before you got it. So like things like that, like doesn't seem to have that much value for giving a significant amount of money for Tesla for a long time. Model Y wasn't too much, at least it was just a year, but it was $2,500 too, so that's a lot of money.
Yeah, and the Cybertruck is, you know that's coming out, but it's a lot less money.
Yeah, the Cybertruck, I think that should be the model going forward. Like $100, like at least you're putting $100, so it's better than no money in terms of like showing, it's decent show of interest. It's certainly not $1,000 show of interest, but it's the decent show of interest. And it's not that big of a deal if like Tesla has to cancel the order for a year and they give you back $100 after a while. It's not the end of the world. But $20,000, like I don't even know. I actually got an email this week. I don't think I've responded yet, but from a Roadster reservation holder that put $50,000. And now he's trying to get his money back, and it's super hard because, of course, Tesla customer service sometimes it's not ideal. But now that Elon is talking about Roadster not being a priority and even being produced after the Cybertruck, and it's already late.
Geez, good for him for hanging around that long.
Yeah, like, you put $50,000 on the line for that long. But now, of course, he wants his money back, and like, he just, whenever it comes out, I might buy it or buy it or not. But, it's not easy to get your refund back on Tesla at all. And even those Solar Roof reservation holders, that they're getting an email from Tesla telling them you're going to get a refund 7 and 10 days. And two of them reach out to me and they're like, yeah, I said, give me my refund. And it's been more than 10 days and they haven't got it yet. So, definitely an area where Tesla can improve and should improve. And I hope they do, because it's just not a good look. Like, it's a premium brand and everything. Like, you want to look better on that front. Like, especially when people are giving you so much money for so long like that. Like, treat them better, please.
Right. And I mean, like, going forward, who is going to give Tesla money to be online?
Yeah.
Like, I've already given up on the, like, you know, reservation. I say that, but I have a Cybertruck reserved, even though I don't even.
But it's because, like, I was the same thing too. Like, going into the Cybertruck on Reeling, I'm like, I'm not going to reserve that thing. Like, even on our grade, because, like, I had my Model 3 deposit for 3-4 years and I still got the car. Like, especially if you're, like, if you're not in the US, it's like, if you're not in California, it's not that
basically
good.
There's three steps, yeah. Like California, US, and then the rest.
Yeah. And then the rest is like, it's not just Tesla's fault, of course. Like, it's dependent on homologation in different countries and everything.
Right.
But then, like, at that point, they have like volume production and they dump a ton of car on the market. So it doesn't matter if you had a reservation or not, because maybe you get it the first, but someone that ordered like 2 years after you is going to get it a week later. So, like, what's the big deal? And they weren't a schmuck for giving Tesla $1,000 for a few years too. So, yeah. Anyway, so I was going into Cybertruck, like, no, I'm not going to do that. But then it was $100. I'm like, all right, I'll put $100 for a few years, whatever, and then
right.
do it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people did that.
Yeah.
And still
yeah,
do it.
It would be nice to be. I mean, so, you know, our profession is reviewing cars. Mm. Tesla, unlike every other company, doesn't, like, let.
Yeah, that's.
Well, I mean. That, you know, maybe Motor Trend or whatever, but like in Elon's buddies, but
YouTubers too.
Right. YouTubers. But generally speaking, they don't give reviews to people. So basically you have to be first in line.
Yeah.
So that was my initial, like, all right, well, you know, I want to be as early as possible, but I know that like California is going to get it first. So one idea I had was like, well, I'll just register it to my wife's grandmother's house in San Jose, you know, like 10 miles from the factory.
Did you do that for the Model Y?
I was going to do that, but then she moved to Florida. So I was like, oh, crap. I got to figure this out. So I changed it, and I'm worried that changing the delivery address may have, like, done something to Tesla's system, and that's why I'm not getting it at this point. Mm-hmm. So maybe I should make some calls, but that's like the worst thing in the world is calling the call center and everything.
Definitely. All right, we have one more story to get into, but if you have your question, put them in the comments below, and we're gonna get to them right after that story. So now is the time if you have a question.
To the right.
Yeah, it's to the right. Okay. I thought it was to the right for us for our screen, but I wasn't sure for YouTube. Oh yeah, no, you're right. It's to the right too. So the Boring Company. We've been talking about them, like, completing their tunnel at the Las Vegas Convention Center. But, of course, the vision was always to make it, like, a broader loop system for them reaching casinos and everything. And now that vision is becoming a real reality. Like, last week, they had the win, Ankar, the win that they raised their hand and, like, I want in. And the win is right next to the Convention Center, so, like, it's a quick tunnel for the Boring Company to do. And now you even have what do they call it? It's a new one, Resort World Las Vegas. It's a new casino. It's just a little bit north of the Wynn on the Strip, and it's fairly close too, so it would make sense for the Boring Company to just pour the tunnel there and then keep going with that machine up. But now that's two casinos that are in, and two that are right next to them. So it's looking good for the Las Vegas broader city loop, I think, because now that you have two casinos that want to do it, there's going to be a bunch of them that don't want to be left out of a new transportation system in the city. So I think you're going to have a bunch of casinos that are going to be looking to extend that tunnel to them and all the way down the strip, all the way to the airport, because the airport is just like a few miles down there. The Las Vegas Strip is just not that big. But when there's things happening, the traffic on there is crazy, so the loop would be very useful. And I think it's like a genius move, really, for the Boring Company, because they're going to have like their first system like all paid up by all those casinos, by the convention center and everything. And then they're going to be able to have a proof of concept for a citywide electric loop system.
Yeah, why not? Like, get a free proof of concept.
Yeah.
As long as they can deliver it.
Well, it looks like they can. I mean, the tunnel is the biggest part, and they are definitely fast at making tunnels at this point, and they seem to be getting better. So I think this thing is going to be a real thing. I think it's going to happen. It's going to be a real project, and I'm excited for it because everything that can reduce traffic is just good on my book.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into the questions.
All right. Let's go back up to the top here. So Pedro, who came in before we even started going, says, how do you think the semi-truck charging network will work? We haven't talked about that too often
recently. I would have liked to have seen one or two mega chargers at this point, but with the semi program being delayed, I don't think there was a priority at all. But so we're seeing Tesla now do more supercharger V3 and the mega charger. Like, they've never been clear about what the mega charger would be beyond that 1 megawatt charging capacity. The way I see it, and the way that we've seen the prototypes going around the U.S., they've been using the supercharger network, and they've been using these multi-plug system where they plug into several supercharger stations at the same time to charge the battery pack faster. They might be just doing that with the supercharger network. However, I don't like that idea at all because, at some places, the supercharger network is already over capacity, and now you're just going to put the truck there and do that. And just use all the chargers at once, with the V3 would be four charger at once to get the megawatt capacity. So
I think they have to do some purpose built.
Yeah, exactly. I think we need to see that happen. So,
but from a design perspective, you could kind of just take four V3 chargers and couple them up.
Yeah,
you know, just have them all. Yeah, four wires and one.
Yeah, you don't need a new standard really to like create like just a mega plug and mega cable or something like that. You can use existing technology, but just maybe package it a little bit different so that it's easier to plug into the semi. But yeah, you're gonna need dedicated charging stations. The advantage though is that the Tesla Semi is going to be a relatively slow ramp up of production, like any other car from Tesla. And at first, it's likely going to go to reservation holders that have like purpose, already a purpose for the truck. Like it's going to be like going between distribution centers or something like that, and then they can just build charging stations at those centers and just go between those. But yeah, for a future where Tesla sells to like trucking companies and things like that, like their trucks serve different customers on different routes all the time, then for that, yeah, Tesla's going to have to go to truck stop and build mega charger at truck stop. There's just no doubt about it.
All right. So Andy Towers, any comment on the rumor of 39% gross margin on made in China SR Plus Model 3?
Yeah, I looked into that real quick, but I don't see, I would call it like a very doubtful rumor at this point. Like 30% gross margin is crazy, especially since Tesla reduced the price recently on the, and they were talking about gross margins similar or a little bit higher in China than they were having in Fremont, and that was before they had to reduce the price to get the incentives. So yeah, I 39% seems like a dream to me. Like it's
absurdly high, and why anyway. All right, Jay Hill says, does Micah have a live podcast? Micah is our two-wheel kind of specialist. He doesn't, but we are actually, yeah. So we're putting together the Micah and Mikey e-bike podcast, kind of in this kind of same format.
Mm-hmm.
So watch for that. The problem is Micah's, you know, all over the world. He's in Israel now, most of the time, and then he's flying to Florida next week, hopefully. And so we try to, you know, we'll try to have like hours that make sense for everybody. But I think it'd be great. I get like 100 questions a week from people wondering about e-bikes right now.
Right. And Micah gets a lot of those too. And the podcast would be like a nice format to answer those, so that because the answers are often good for everyone, not just for the people asking
them. Right. Maybe we should have like a Q&A podcast just to start.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're going to have something. Don't worry. Michael Frank, have a Y order, but haven't gotten the notification you talked about. No VIN match yet. order in Vermont. Yeah, Mike, I think maybe us on the East Coast are a little bit. There is also this weird thing that Tesla is like, well, you need to have your insurance with, and you know, and you have to upload your insurance, and I can upload the insurance, but like you can't get insurance without a VIN number, and they want you to upload the insurance with the VIN number, and they haven't given me a VIN number, so it's one of those weird things. Girish Vaka, any thoughts on the 1,000,000-mile battery being compatible for retrofit? As Tesla is a sustainable company, would there be a battery upgrade? I guess he's wondering. I don't think so. What do you think?
No. There's never been any indication that they were open to do that. Retrofits, no. Tesla wants you to buy a new car.
Right.
Which is fair for your comment, Girish, in terms of sustainability. It's not perfect, but they're gonna last a long time. That's the thing, though. Even if you don't have the 1,000,000-mile batteries, it might still be like, especially for the Model 3s, I could see them being like 400,000 miles batteries. Good luck getting to 400,000 miles. I have a car there, and there's very few of them out there that goes to that distance.
After the lifetime of the current battery ends, will the replacement be 1,000,000-mile if somebody wants to buy? I don't think so. I don't think you can buy it. I think they replace it, and they're probably not going to replace it with something better.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. And he's got a 2019. So DD, I'm picking up my Model Y on Sunday. Ordered it in mid-February.
But look at the next comment. He's in California, of course.
Yeah, California. So I should have probably just had it delivered to whoever lives at that house now. My Tesla Lease Solar is now installed. Inspection hopefully turned on Monday.
Hey, congrats.
Andy Tower says. Congrats. I should have also told you, Fred, a friend of mine in Florida had a three-year, Florida, like Sunshine State, had a Tesla roof
reservation
reserved. Mm-hmm. And
you got that email? The same.
Got that email, and he was pissed.
Is he leaving the boonies in Florida, or is it like
no? He's like he owns a big iPhone repair business.
That's strange. He's
doing quite well for himself. Yeah. I don't know specifically where he lives, but anyway, Angel Sanchez on page 13 of Tesla's 2019 impact report. It shows that after 200,000 miles, the battery range decreased to like 15%. Do you think Tesla is too optimistic about the battery life after 200,000 miles?
Well, they don't go into the battery life after 200,000 miles. The charts ends at 200,000 miles. I think for the first 200,000 miles, 15% seems accurate. But again, that's overall Model S and X. That's what they use. So what we talked about earlier, we went into the specific of different battery packs, which I think it's worth looking into, because just not all packs are equal. So, but yeah, I mean, after 200,000 miles, it looks like it slows down. So going from 15% to like 30% battery degradation might take you like another 200,000 miles. And again, that's crazy. That's not a lot of mileage.
Yeah, they follow up. As your posts in the video stated, like it depends on which battery pack.
Yeah,
the 90 is a big deal. Or seems to be a lot quicker. Let's see, getting down here. This is a electric podcast and a Tesla podcast.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there's just, especially nowadays, guys, there's not that much news coming out about other things, because like everybody's like delaying their news because of the pandemic. Like we have a few things coming up, but like, I mean, they were supposed to be last month. Like I was supposed to be at like four different launches from companies other than Tesla, but like, none of them happened and all of being delayed. So the news cycle is not that great right now, but Tesla news, there's always a ton of them, because there's a ton of things happening with the software update and the Tesla owners everywhere, like the testing their cars and stuff. Like you cannot be mad at us for talking more about Tesla.
Yeah. So let's keep going. So John Smith says Nikola is a scam. I bought 100 put contracts at $10 strike for October 16th, 35 contract. I think this is easy money. Mm. All right, so we were talking about Nikola. Does Nikola sound like it's converting itself into a patent troll?
Yeah, that I've said that. it just doesn't look good. Like if they are trying to protect their IP, and their IP is a vague design of their truck. Like if you're going down to that level, it means you don't have much to back things up. Like,
yeah, I mean. Maybe that maybe they have some stuff behind the scenes that they're really quiet about. A few days ago, Nikola had a $32 billion market cap, which blows my mind.
Yeah.
Who the hell is buying this long? Says John Smith. Fred, did you hear that Trevor Milton has really disappointed you?
I met that guy once. Okay, now he's a billionaire. That guy, at least on paper. When I met him, I thought he was a nice guy. I thought he was knowledgeable about the EV market, but I was in disagreement with his idea of like hydrogen fuel cell being the future. And he didn't fight me too much on that. Like my main problem with Nikola, if you look at the core of the business, they started out with a natural gas truck. They wanted the natural gas truck is going to be the future. And then they switched to, combination of batteries and natural gas, then batteries and hydrogen. So like they were all over the place for the first few years of the business. So they don't even know what they're about, really. Like they want to be the next big thing, but I wasn't convinced at all. And I mean, the time I met Trevor too was for that electric UTV, which I thought was great. I thought it was a great little vehicle prototype that they had, though, even though it broke during our testing, but I mean, it's a prototype that happens. So I won't hold them responsible for that. But that was supposed to come out the next year. And I went to Utah to meet them 2017, I think. That was supposed to come out the next year, 2018. Now 2020. Do you see any Nikola UTVs out there? I don't.
Yeah, they're not even talking about it anymore.
Yeah. It's all about the trucks now.
All right, Sean Goggin with the Tesla Semi, I think producing it now also use up a lot of batteries, which may be available if demand for other cars is generally low. I mean, that's the problem with the Semi is they got to go another order of magnitude higher on batteries.
But that's what I've been saying too. When the pandemic hit and I was like, all right, Tesla's going to probably have tough time selling cars for a while. I thought maybe, but they could switch to commercial vehicles, like commercial vehicles that the market, if you're cheaper, there's still going to be people buying. And the Tesla Semi would fit in that category for sure.
All right. Lawson Kerf says, assuming consumers and municipalities start spending again, new semis will be needed. Not at all certain that the economy will recover soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Could the early Tesla Semi rigs use lower energy batteries for lighter weight cargo clients like parcel service and supermarkets?
I don't know.
Mean, yeah, sure. I guess they could, but then they're not going to go as far. I guess that's kind of like the Model 3 in China. They're using the less dense batteries there. Andy Tower, Tesla data leak. Like you have a puddle of data on the garage floor. I guess that's supposed to be funny. Michael Valicella says, but the use of case for this car was the worst case scenario. High charge rate and charge to a high state of charge.
We went into that. Yeah, for sure. Now, I'm not talking about my car specifically. Like, it's a good, it's a fun case study, but definitely in the worst case. But we do have the data for all other 90s and 85 kilowatt hour batch packs. So that's what really is the interesting data here.
And then Andy Tower's back and cancellation is BS. Wondering what the holdup is. I think it's probably they're just going to hit the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, the market where it makes the most sense on net metering and incentives.
Daniel Niels, thoughts on Nikola and Trevor Milton's ridiculous self-comparisons to Musk and Tesla? I hadn't seen any of that.
Well, I hope that's not true. If it is, it's completely delusional and would...
Right.
Like, even if they would have a great product and everything, like if you compare Nikola to Tesla and Trevor to Elon, that boy.
All right, Angel Sanchez. Only reason to reserve a Cybertruck is to lock in full self-driving price.
I've heard that. Is that true? Like, you put $100 right now and you get the same price. You get the $7,000 self-driving? That doesn't make sense to me. I'm not sure it does.
I mean, for $100, that would theoretically save you a lot of money. But
yeah,
I'm also, we've discussed this on previous shows. I'm a little bit, I'm not negative on.
Well, we're talking about 2022 here, though. Well, right, late 2021, early 2022, whatever. Let's say 2022. Like, you should see some decent improvements on driving with the hardware Tesla.
Right. So I'm always I want to see the self driving before, because we've had, you know,
timeline.
It was coming soon a long time ago. All right. You can get it delivered. He's talking about my Model Y to my apartment in San Jose. Thank you. Still waiting on my solar roof. They said I would have it around July. I need a new roof ASAP. Last time I talked to Tesla, and the roof was in January.
Yeah, that's an issue too. You need to time the new roof with like when you need one.
Right.
It's not ideal.
You got the leaks coming down. Yeah. Like, come on, Tesla. How many boring machines does Elon currently have?
I think it's three. We said three last time we looked into it.
And at least two projects underway. Mm. Do you think Dice, being so that's VW's CEO, replaced by Rolf Brandstetter as VW brand as CEO, is going to be a step back for VW's EV program? Is that news?
Yeah. Apparently, it wasn't clear, but he wasn't fired. But like now, he's not responsible for the VW brand. Like normally, like the Volkswagen guy was responsible for the VW brand, but also other Volkswagen brand on a higher level, even though all the brands.
You're talking about VW Group, and VW.
Yeah, like. But now, like, he's just like more like CEO of the group, but some of the guys responsible for the brand itself. So his responsibilities now are not clear, but he wasn't necessarily like fired or anything like that. Personally, I never had I don't know him personally, DS, but publicly, his comments he was making and everything, I always liked him. Like, he looked like serious about EVs, especially like how he saw Tesla's competition, which I think, like, I don't like when those automakers are like, nah, we don't see Tesla as a competitor and anything like that. Like, they are completely delusional about it. Like, they want to like play it down. VS was always, no, they're a serious company, and we are looking into them, and we like what they're doing and everything. Like, you have to, like, at this point. So I was happy about that. So I don't know if it means like good or bad about EVs, but I did see the reports from Germany that VS was partly responsible for Volkswagen not being quicker on the EV market. But if that's the truth, it was really like behind closed doors, not publicly, because publicly he seemed very pro EVs.
Yeah. Adam Ortiz asks, thoughts on if Tesla will follow Rivian's battery reusability strategy when it comes to energy storage of old Tesla batteries? Maybe a 1,000,000-mile battery will allow that.
I mean, Tesla was always recycling first instead of reusing for stationary storage. They want to build new batteries for stationary storage. So I don't see it for now.
Zach asks, can you convert an ICE bike into an e-bike? I believe Micah is actually doing that with a Honda right now.
Last year he was doing it when he was still living in Boston. I don't know if he's still doing that project.
What? I think it's in Florida right now. I think he moved it down there. So we're going to have to pressure him into giving us an update on that. Yeah. Maybe that'll be part of the podcast. Singing Adonis, where is the tow hitch OEM manual or instructions for the tow mode in the new Model Y? I think you're asking the wrong people. You want to be asking Google or Tesla. Not us. Yeah. All right. Andreas, he said your name on the Tesla Daily podcast in relation to reporters that have turned on him out of fear of losing access to Elon.
Oh, seriously? I need to go check that out. You think Trevor Milton thinks I'm bashing him because I don't want to lose access to, first of all, what access to Elon? What is he talking? Like, how can you fear losing something you don't have, first of all? And secondly, Trevor lost me. Like, I was friendly with Trevor for a while after that meeting him in Utah. I was friendly with him. Like I said, I thought he was a nice guy and everything. And he probably is a nice guy. Like, but I told him once I talked to him after he filed that lawsuit with Tesla. And I'm like, I told him, like, that's not cool. Like, that's a stupid move. And, you should take it back. Like, I said, Nicola won't have any credibility with me until they drop that. And he's like, okay, that's all he told me. And he said, okay, he didn't defend it or anything. He just said, okay. So I'm like, all right.
All right. So, last question, Stefan Schnabberger asks thoughts about the Arcimoto FUV. Or I guess that's a stock symbol. I've driven that thing a few times, once in Vegas with you, Fred, mm-hmm. once in Texas last year at the Fully Charged event. Both times, a lot of fun. I don't know, though, like, if it has a huge market potential. Like, it's you're out in so the Arcimoto is a three-wheeler, two mm-hmm. wheels in the front, one wheel in the back. It's pretty fast, pretty powerful, pretty inexpensive, and they're made in Oregon. What do you think, Fred? I don't know.
Full disclosure, I'm invested in FUV, so take that into take that into account. But I do like them. What I like about it is that it's more useful than a motorcycle, safer than a motorcycle. But the usability is important and their functionality is important, and it's extremely efficient. It's still extremely efficient the way that they build it. Like it's like several times more efficient than an average electric car. And so for some services, like from delivery services and everything like that, the Uber Eats here, for example, like Uber Eats is a massive thing, especially in this pandemic and everything. I would like to see those people having like vehicle like that, super efficient cars that would reduce a better impact on the environment, be super cheap to operate, like super cheap, like $10 of electricity can probably last you a week on this thing. So even if you use it all the time for like delivery. So I think it's going to have a market on that front. I was happy about the news this week that they announced that they hired the Monroe associate, Sandy Monroe, and they sent him a bike and they hired him to just break it down and do a big improvement on manufacturing, which I think is their issue right now. They cannot produce it in volume and be profitable. So Sandy's probably going to go a long way in helping them do that. So yeah, I mean, it's a fun little EV to have on the road, I think. And there's not much competition on that market right now. So
yeah, and you didn't even mention how fun it is to ride.
Yeah, it's a fun. They call it an FUV, a fun electric vehicle, whatever.
They're a blast. Yeah. It's like a real pleasure to ride. All right, that's it.
All right, thanks a lot for listening, everyone. It was a fun episode. You can subscribe and hit the notification button to know when we have a new episode coming up of the podcast, and also other videos on YouTube, which we're trying to invest more into on content on YouTube. So check it out. Thanks a lot for listening to us on your podcast app too. We are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and every other app you can think of out there. If you can give us a thumbs up, a review there too, it's always super useful. And we're going to see you same place, same time next week. Have a good one, guys.